running down his legs in streams, bright and red and steady, staining the waters with the pounding of his heart. Chapter 5.
"You're lucky," Pima's mother said. "You should be dead."
Naylor was almost too tired to respond, but he mustered a grin for the occasion.
"But I'm not. I'm alive."
Pima's mother picked up a blade of rusted metal and held it in front of his face.
"If this was even another inch into you, you would have washed into shore as body scavenge."
Sadna regarded him seriously.
"You're lucky. The fates were holding you close today. Should have been another Jackson boy."
She offered him the rusty shiv.
"Keep that for talisman. It wanted you. It was going for your lung."
Naylor reached for the metal that had almost cut him down and winced as his stitches pulled.
"You see," she said, "you're blessed today. Fates love you."
Naylor shook his head. "I don't believe in fates." But he said it quietly, low enough that she wouldn't hear. If fates existed, they'd put him with his dad, and that meant they were bad news. Better to think life was random than to think the world was out to get you. Fates were all right if you were Pima and got lucky with a good mom and a dad who was nice enough to have died before he could start beating you. But the rest of the time, watch out. Pima's mother looked up, her dark brown eyes studying him.
"Then you get right with whatever gods you worship. I don't care if it's that elephant-headed Ganesha, or Jesus Christ, or the Rust Saint, or your dead mother. But someone was looking after you. Don't spit on that gift."
Naylor nodded obediently. Pima's mother was the best thing he had going. He didn't want to tick her off. Her shack of plastic tarps and old boards and scavenged palms was the safest place he knew. Here he could always count on shared crawdads or rice, and even on days when there was nothing to eat, well, there was still the certainty that within these walls, under blue dangling fate's eyes and a mottled statue of the Rust Saint, no one would try to cut him, or fight him, or steal from him. Here, fear and tension fell away in the presence of Sadna's strength. Naylor moved gingerly, testing the stitching and cleaning work she'd done.
"It feels good, Sadna. Thanks for patching me." "I hope it does you some good."
She didn't look up. She was washing the stainless steel knives in a bucket of water, and the water had turned red with her work.
"You're young. You're not addicted to anything. And say what you like about your father, you've got that Lopez tenacity. You have a chance."
"You think I'll get an infection?" Pima's mother shrugged, her corded muscles rippling under her tank. Her black skin gleamed in the candlelight of her shack. She'd left her own crew and shift to make sure that he'd been cleaned up. Dropped a quota, thanks to Pima, who had had the sense to run for her when she heard that her missing crew boy was down in the shallows instead of up in the ship.
"I'm not sure, Naylor," she said. "You took a lot of cuts. Skin's supposed to protect you, but water's dirty here, and you were in oil."
She shook her head. "I'm not a doctor." He made a joke of it.
"I don't need a doctor. I just need a needle and thread. Patch me up like a sail. I'm good as new."
She didn't smile.
"Keep those clean. If you get fever or skin starts to pus, you find me. We'll put maggots on it and see if that will help."
Naylor made a face, but he nodded at her fierce glare and gingerly sat up. He put his feet down on the floor, watching as Sadna bustled around the single room, carrying his blood water out into the dark, then coming back. He straightened and carefully made his way to the door. He pushed the plastic scavenge door aside so that he could see down the beach. Even at night, the wrecks glowed with work, people laboring by torchlight as they continued the steady job of disassembly. The ships showed as huge black shadows against the bright star points and the surge of the Milky Way above. The torchlights flickered, bobbing and moving. Sledge noise rang across the water, comforting sounds of work and activity. The air tanged with the coal reek of smelters and the salt fresh breeze coming off the water. It was beautiful. Before almost dying, he hadn't known it. But now that he was out, Bright Sands Beach was the best thing he'd ever seen. He couldn't stop looking at it all, couldn't stop smiling at the people walking along the sand, at the cook fires where people roasted tilapia they'd hooked in the shallows, at the jangle of music and the shout of drinking from the nail sheds. It was all beautiful. Almost as beautiful as the sight of Sloth getting kicked down the beach, her eyes wet with tears for herself while he was getting stitched up. Bappy had put his knife through her light crew tattoos himself, disowning her completely. She'd never work as a shipbreaker again. And probably nowhere else either. Not after breaking blood oaths. She'd proven that no one could trust her. Naylor had been surprised that Sloth hadn't protested. He wasn't about to forgive, but he respected that she hadn't begged or tried to apologize when Bappy got out his knife. Everyone knew the score. What was done was done. She'd gambled and lost. Life was like that. There were lucky strikes and there were Sloths. There were Jackson boys and there were lucky bastards like him. Different sides of the same coin. You tossed your luck in the air and it rattled down on the gambling boards and you either lived or died. "It's the fates," Pima's mother muttered. "They've taken you now. No telling what they'll do with you." She was staring at him with an expression that almost looked like sadness. He wanted to ask her what she meant. But Pima came in through the door with the rest of the crew.
"Hey, hey," Pima said. "Look at our crew boy."
She inspected his puckered wounds and stitches. "You'll get some nice scars out of this, Naylor."
"Lucky scars," said Moon Girl. "Even better than a tattoo of the Rust Saint's face."
She handed him a bottle.
"What's this?" Naylor asked.
Moon Girl shrugged.
"Luck gift. God's got you tight now. I'm getting close to God."
Naylor smiled and sipped, was surprised at the quality of alcohol that burned his mouth. Pima laughed.
"It's Black Ling." She leaned close. "Tick-Tock stole it. Crazy lice spider just walked out of Chen's noodle shack with it. He's got no sense, but he's got fast hands."
She pulled him toward the shore.
"We got a fire going. Let's go get drunk."
"What about work tomorrow?"
"Bappy says that storm's coming for sure," she grinned. "We can strip wire with a hangover, no problem."
The crew gathered around the bonfire, swapping drinks. Pima went away and came back a little while later with a pot of rice and beans and then surprised Naylor again with a stick of grilled pigeon. At his look of surprise, she said,
"Other people want to get close to God and the fates. People saw you come out of the ship. No one gets luck like that."
He didn't question any more, but ate greedily, glad to be alive and eating so well. They drank, passing around the rusty shiv that had nearly killed him. Considered the possibilities of turning it into a talisman, a decoration to hang around his neck. The buzz of alcohol warmed him, made the world seem even better than before. He was alive. His skin sang with life. Even the pain in his back and shoulder where the shiv had driven into him felt good. Being close to death had made everything in his life shine. He rolled his shoulder, savoring the pain. Pima watched him across the firelight.
"You think you can crew tomorrow?"
Naylor made himself nod.
"It's just stripping wire."
"Who we getting for scuttleduct?"
Moon Girl asked. Pima grimaced.
"I thought it was going to be Sloth. Got to swear in someone new to replace her. Get bloody with someone."
"Lot of good that does," Tick-Tock muttered.
Yeah, well, some people still keep their word.
They all looked down the beach to where Sloth had been dumped. She'd be hungry soon, and needing someone to protect her. Someone to share scavenge with, to cover her back when she couldn't work. The beach was a hard place to survive without crew. Naylor stared at the bonfires, thinking about the nature of luck. One quick decision by Sloth, and everything about her future was decided. She didn't have many options now, and all of them were ugly, full of blood and pain and desperation. He took another swig from the bottle, wondering if he pitied her despite what she'd done.
"We could bring Teela on," Pearlie suggested. "She's small."
"She's got a club foot," Moon Girl said. "How fast can she move?"
"For light crew, she'd hustle."
"I'll decide later," Pima said.
"Maybe Naylor heals quick, and we don't need a scuttleduct replacement."
Naylor smiled sourly. "Or Bappy cuts me out and sells my slot. Then none of us get to choose."
"Not over my head."
No one said anything. It was too good a night to spoil it with bad speculation. Bappy would do whatever he wanted, but they didn't need to pick that scab tonight. Pima seemed to sense their doubts.
"I talked to Boss Man already," she insisted. "Naylor's got a couple days free, on the Boss Man's quota. Even Bappy wants to get close to luck like his."
"He's not pissed that I lost that crew to other crews?"
"Well, that too. But the wire came out with you, so he was happy about that. You got your heel time. Rust Saint's my witness."
It almost sounded good enough to believe. Naylor took another drink. He'd seen enough adult promises turn out to just be wishes that he wasn't going to hold his breath, though. He needed to be crewing tomorrow, and he needed to look useful fast. He carefully worked his shoulder, willing it to get better. A couple days wire stripping would be a blessing. If anything out of this whole mess was lucky, it was that a storm was coming. Then again, without the storm, he wouldn't have been back in the hole twice on the same day. Naylor drank again, enjoying the view of the beach. In the night, you couldn't even see the oil slicks on the water, just the liquid silver reflections of the moon. Far out on the distant water, a few red and green lights glowed like fairy fire, the running lights of clipper ships crossing the gulf. The sailing ship slid silently across the horizon, blown so fast that their lights disappeared over the curve of the earth within minutes. He tried to imagine standing on the deck of one of those ships, leaving the beach and light crew behind, sailing free and fast. Pima took the booze bottle from him.
"Daydreaming?"
"Night dreaming," Naylor nodded out at the colored lights. "You ever sail on one?"
"A clipper?"
Pima shook her head.
"No way. Saw one dock once. They had a whole bunch of half-men for guards. Wouldn't let beach trash paddle close," she grimaced. "The dog faces put electricity in the water."
Tick-Tock laughed.
"I remember that. I tried to swim out and started tingling all over."
Pima scowled.
"And then we had to drag you back like a dead fish. Almost got us all zapped."
"I would have been fine,"
Moon Girl snorted.
"The dog faces would have eaten you alive. That's how they do. Don't even cook their meat. Those monsters always tear in raw. If we left you out there, they'd have been using your ribs for toothpicks."
"Grind that. There's a half-man who muscles for Lucky Strike. What's its name?"
Tick-Tock halted briefly, stymied.
"Anyway, I've seen it. It's got big, damn teeth, but it don't eat people."
"How would you know? The ones it eats aren't around to bitch anymore."
"Goats," Pima said suddenly. "The half-man eats goats. When he first showed up on the beach, they paid him goats to work heavy crew.
My mom told me he could eat a whole goat in 3 days.
She made a face.
Moon Girl's right. You don't want to tangle with those monsters. You never know when their animal side will try to take your arm off.
Naylor was still watching the lights moving out in the deeps. You ever wonder what it would be like to ride a clipper? Get out on one of those things?
I don't know, Pima shook her head. Fast, I guess.
Damn fast, Moon Girl supplied.
Red rip fast, Pearlie said. They were all looking out at the water now, hungry.
You think they even know we're here? Moon Girl asked.
Pima spat in the sand.
We're just flies on garbage to people like that.
The lights kept moving. Naylor tried to imagine what it would be like to stand on deck, hurtling across the waves, blasting through spray. He'd spent evenings staring at images of clippers under sail, pictures that he had stolen from magazines that Bappy kept in a drawer in his supervisor's shack. But that was as close as he'd ever gotten. He had spent hours poring over those sleek, predatory lines, studying the sails and hydrofoils, the smooth, engineered surfaces so different from the rusting wrecks he worked every day, staring at the beautiful people who smiled and drank on the decks. The ships whispered promises of speed and salt air and open horizons. Sometimes Naylor wished he could simply step through the pages and escape onto the prow of a clipper. Sailing away in his imagination from the daily mangle of ship-breaking life. Other times, he tore the pictures up and threw them away, hating that they made him hungry for things he hadn't known he'd wanted until he'd seen the sails. The wind shifted. A black cloud of smelting smoke blew over the beach, enveloping them in haze and ash. Everyone started coughing and choking, trying to get some clean air. The wind shifted again, but Naylor kept coughing. His time in the oil room had hurt him. His chest and lungs still felt tender, and the taste of oil lingered in his mouth. By the time Naylor looked up from his coughing, the clipper ships were gone. More smelting smoke blew across their campfire. Naylor smiled bitterly in the acrid wind. That was what thinking about clipper ships got you. A lungful of smoke because you weren't paying attention to what was around. He took another swig from his bottle and passed it to Pearlie.
Thanks for the luck gift, he said. I never knew Black Ling was so damn fine.
Moon Girl smiled.
Damn fine drink for a damn lucky bastard.
He's lucky all right, Pima said. Luckiest bastard I ever saw.
She inspected the other luck offerings that had accumulated over the night. Another stick of pigeon that Naylor offered around to the group. A pack of hand-rolled cigarettes. A bottle of cheap liquor from Jim Thompson's still. A thick silver earring. Wide board. A sea-polished shell. A half-kilo sack of rice.
Luckier than Lucky Strike? Naylor teased.
Not after you lost all that oil, Moon Girl said. If you were Lucky Strike, you'd have figured out how to sneak it out. Instead of wasting it. Be a big rich man now, owning the beach.
The others grunted agreement, but Pima had gone still, her black skin a shadow.
No one's that lucky, she said bitterly. Everyone daydreaming about being the next Lucky Strike is what made Sloth go bad.
Yeah, well, Naylor shrugged. I still feel lucky today.
Pima made a face.
You weren't just lucky, she said. You were smart. And Lucky Strike, he was smart too. Half the crews out here find some cachet of oil or copper or whatever, and none of them figure out what to do with it. Crew boss grabs it in the end, and they get bumped off the wrecks. Shit.
She took another swig from the bottle and wiped her lips on her arm before passing it on to Moon Girl, who drank and coughed.
Luck isn't what you need out here, Pima said. Smarts is what you need.
Luck or smarts, I don't care, long as I'm not dead.
Cheers to that. Still, we get all excited about being like Lucky Strike and we lose our heads. We waste all our money throwing dice, trying to get close to luck, trying to get the big win. We pray to the Rust Saint to help us find something we can keep for ourselves. Hell, even my mom puts good rice on the scavenge god's scale for a luck offering, and we just end up like sloth.
Pima nodded down the beach to where men from the heavy crew had started their bonfires. Nailshed girls were with them, laughing and teasing them, twining slender arms around the men's waists, urging them to drink and spend.
Sloth's down there now. I saw her. Dreaming about a lucky strike got her nothing except shame cuts through her crew tattoos. And a whole lot of bad company.
Naylor studied the men's bonfire. You think she'll come after me?
I would, Pima said. She's got nothing to lose now.
She nodded at Naylor's luck gifts.
You better find a good place to stash all that. She'll probably try to steal it. Maybe she finds some sugar daddy down there to take her under his wing, but no one else is going to deal with her. Grub shacks won't take her because the shipbreakers won't buy anything from someone with slashed crew tats. Smelter clans definitely won't touch an oathbreaker. Liar like that, she's out of options,
Moon Girl said. She could sell off a kidney, maybe tap out a couple pints of blood for the harvesters. They're always buying.
Sure, she's got those pretty eyes, Pearly said. Harvesters would take those in a second.
Pima shrugged.
Medical buyers can slice and dice her like a side of pork, but after a while everyone runs out of pieces. Then what?
Life cult, Naylor suggested. They'd buy her eggs.
Just what we need, Moon Girl made a face. Bunch of half-men that look like sloth.
Dog DNA would be a step up for her, Pearly said. At least dogs are loyal.
They all laughed darkly. Started joking about which animals would enhance sloth's genetic makeup. Roosters at least woke up early. Crawdads were good eating. Snakes were perfect for ductwork, and they didn't have hands, so they couldn't stab you in the back. Every animal they considered was an improvement over the creature who had betrayed them. Shipbreaking was too dangerous to not have trust.
Sloth's about to hit a dead end, Pima said. But we've got the same problem. Maybe not this year, but soon, she shrugged. My mom's feeding me extra, trying to get me so I can compete into heavy crew.
She hesitated, looked down the beach again to the bonfires and the men.
I don't think I'm going to make it. Too big for light crew, too small for heavy crew. What happens then? How many clans are taking kids who aren't their own?
It's bullshit, Pearly said. You shouldn't have to quit light crew. You do better scavenge than anyone on the ship. You could take Bappy's job in a second, take out slack and double quota.
He snapped his fingers.
Just like that. You could take Bappy's job for sure.
Pima smiled.
There's a long line for that job, and it don't start with us. You've got to buy in big time, and none of us has that kind of cash.
It's stupid, Pearly said. You'd be a better crew boss.
Yeah, Pima grimaced. That's where the luck comes in, I guess.
She looked around at them seriously.
You should remember that, all of you. If you're just smart or just lucky, it's not worth a copper yard. You got to have both, or you're just like sloth down at those bonfires, begging for someone to find a use for you.
She took another swig from the bottle and handed it back. Stood up.
I got to get some sleep.
She headed down the beach, calling back over her shoulder to Naylor.
See you tomorrow, lucky boy, and be on time. Bappy will cut you for sure if you don't show up and sweat with the rest of us.
Naylor and the rest of the crew watched her go. The last log in the fire crackled, sending sparks. Moon Girl reached into the flame, quickly turning the log deeper into the coals.
"There's no way she'll make heavy crew," she said. "No way any of us do."
"You trying to spoil the night?" Pearlie asked.
Moon Girl's pierced features glittered in the firelight.
"Just saying what we all know. Pima's worth 10 of Bappy, but it don't matter. Another year, she's got the same problem as Sloth. It's luck or nothing."
She held up a blue glass fate's amulet she kept around her neck.
"We kiss the eye and hope things turn out, but we're all just as screwed as Sloth."
"No,"
Tick-Tock shook his head.
"The difference is that Sloth deserved it, and Pima doesn't."
"Deserving doesn't have anything to do with it," Moon Girl said. "If people got what they deserved, Naylor's mom would be alive. Pima's mom would own Lawson and Carlson, and I'd be eating 6 times a day.
She spit into the fire.
"You don't deserve anything. Maybe Sloth was an oathbreaker, but she was smart enough to know you don't deserve things. You gotta take them."
"I don't buy that," Pearlie shook his head. "What have you got without your promises? You're nothing. Less than nothing."
Naylor said, "You didn't see that oil, Pearlie. It was the biggest lucky strike I ever saw. We can all pretend like we aren't like Sloth, but you never saw so much oil for the taking in all your life. It would turn anyone into an oathbreaker."
"Not me,"
Pearlie said vehemently.
"Sure, none of us," Naylor said. "But you still weren't there."
"Not Pima," Tick-Tock said. "Never her."
And that killed the discussion, because whatever other lies they told themselves, Tick-Tock was right. Pima never wavered. She never broke, and she always had your back. Even when she was bitching at you to make quota, she always kept you safe. Naylor suddenly wished he could give all his luck to her. If anyone deserved something better, it was her. Depressed by the turn of conversation, people started gathering the leavings of their meal, dousing the beech wood with sand, and getting ready to return to whatever families or caretakers or safe flops they had. The wind blew over them, and Naylor turned into the freshening breeze. The storm was coming for sure. He had enough experience on the coast to have the sense of it. It was out there, coming in. A good big blow. It could shut down work for a couple days at least, maybe give him a chance to rest up and heal. He inhaled the fresh, salty air as it poured over him. Other campfires were dousing out, and there was an increasing scurry of activity as the beach residents started tying down meager belongings in preparation for changing weather. Out on the horizon, another clipper ship was skating across the Gulf's night waters, running lights glowing blue. He took a deep breath, watching it rush for whatever port would protect it. For once, Naylor was glad to be on shore. He turned and trudged down the beach toward his own hut. If he was really lucky, his father would be out drinking and he'd be able to slip in unnoticed. Naylor's home lay at the margin of the jungle, surrounded by kudzu vines and cypress. Made of palm sheathing and bamboo struts and scavenged sheet tin that his father had tagged with his fist mark to make sure nobody scavenged it while they were away during the day. Naylor set his luck gifts outside the door. He could almost remember times when this door hadn't seemed dangerous. Before his mother went feverish. Before his father turned drunk and high. Now, opening the door was always a gamble. If it weren't for the fact that Naylor was wearing loaned clothes, he wouldn't even risk the return. But still, his other set of clothes lay inside, and if he was lucky, his dad was still out drinking. He scraped open the door and padded through the interior darkness, opened the jar of glow paint and smeared a bit on his forehead. The phosphorescence gave dim shadows. A match flared. Naylor whirled. His father leaned against the wall behind the door, watching him, a nearly empty bottle of booze gripped in one fist.
"Good to see you, Naylor."
Richard Lopez was a rib-thin conglomeration of ropey muscle and burning energy. Tattooed dragons ran the length of his arms and sent their tails curling up his neck to twine with the faded patterns of his own long-ago light crew tattoos. Fresher and far more ominous, a whole series of victory scars gleamed on his chest, showing all the men he'd broken when he'd been a ring fighter. 13 red and angry slashes there. His very own baker's dozen, he would say, grinning. And then he'd ask Naylor if he was ever going to be as tough as his old man. Richard lit the storm lamp that hung overhead, setting it swaying. Naylor held still, trying to guess his father's mood as the man pulled a scavenged chair around and straddled it. The lamp's swinging glare cast shadows across them both, looming and swooping shapes. Richard Lopez was sliding high, burning with amphetamines and liquor. His bloodshot eyes studied Naylor carefully, a snake waiting to strike.
"What the hell happened to you?"
Naylor tried not to show fear. The man didn't have anything in his hands, no knife, no belt, no willow whip. His blue eyes might be crystal bright, but he was still a calm ocean.
"I had an accident on the job," Naylor said.
"An accident? Or were you being stupid?"
"No."
"Thinking about girls?" his dad pressed.
"Thinking about nothing at all? Daydreaming like you do?"
He jerked his head toward the torn image of a clipper ship that Naylor had tacked to the wall of their shack.
"Thinking about your pretty sailing ships?"
Naylor didn't take the bait. If he protested, it would just make things worse. His father said,
"How are you going to pay your way around here if you're off your crew?"
"I'm not off," Naylor said. "I'm back tomorrow."
"Yeah?"
His father's bloodshot eyes narrowed suspiciously. He nodded at the rag sling holding Naylor's shoulder.
"With a gimp arm? Bappy doesn't do charity work."
Naylor forced himself not to back down. "I'm still good. Sloth got cut, so I got no competition in the ducks. I'm smaller."
"Smaller than shit. Yeah, you got that going for you."
His father took a swallow from his bottle.
"Where's your filter mask?"
he asked. Naylor hesitated.
"Well?"
"I lost it."
Silence stretched between them.
"Lost it, huh?"
was all his father said. But Naylor could tell that dangerous gears were turning now, fueled by the rattle of drugs and anger and whatever madness caused his father's bouts of frenzied work and brutality. Underneath the man's tattooed features, a storm was brewing, full of undertows and crashing surf and water spouts. The deadly weather that buffeted Naylor every day as he tried to navigate the coastline of his father's moods. Richard Lopez was thinking. And now Naylor needed to know what, or he'd never escape the shack without a beating. Naylor tried an explanation.
"I fell through a duct and into an oil pocket. Couldn't get out. The mask couldn't breathe anyway. It was full of oil. It was done for."
"Don't tell me it was done for," his father snapped. "That's not your say."
"No, sir."
Naylor waited wary. Richard Lopez tapped his booze bottle idly against the back of the chair.
"I'll bet you want another mask now. You were always complaining about the dust with that old one."
"No, sir,"
Naylor said again.
"No, sir,"
his father mimicked.
"Damn, Naylor, you're a smart one these days. Always saying the right thing."
He smiled, showing yellow teeth all splayed out like a hand, but still the bottle tapped against the back of the chair. Naylor wondered if his father was going to try to hit him with it. The bottle tapped again. Richard Lopez's predatory eyes studied Naylor.
"You're a smart little bastard these days," he murmured.
I'm almost thinking you're getting too damn smart for your own good. Maybe you're starting to say things you don't mean. Yes, sir. No, sir. Sir.
Naylor could barely breathe. He knew now that his father was mapping out the violence, planning to catch Naylor, to teach him some respect. Naylor's eyes went to the door. Even with his father sliding high, the man had a good chance of catching him, and then everything would be blood and bruises, and there was no way he'd get back on to Light Crew before Bappy cut him. Naylor cursed that he hadn't just gone straight to the safety of Pima's shack. His eyes went to the door again. If he could just... Richard caught the flick of Naylor's gaze. The man's features turned cold. He stood and pushed his chair away.
Come here, boy.
I got a luck gift, Naylor said suddenly. A good one. For getting out of the oil. Naylor kept his voice steady, trying to pretend he didn't know his father was planning on beating the hell out of him, playing innocent, talking normal, like there wasn't about to be pain and screaming and a chase. It's right here, he said.
Walk slow. Don't make him think you're running.
It's just right here, Naylor said again as he opened the door and reached outside. He grabbed Moon Girl's luck gift and offered it to his dad. The bottle gleamed in the lamplight, a talisman.
Black Ling, Naylor said. The crew gave it to me. Said I should share it with you, because I'm lucky for you having me.
Naylor held his breath. His father's cold eyes went to the bottle. Maybe his father would drink, or maybe he'd take the bottle and hit him with it. Naylor just didn't know. The man had become more unpredictable as he worked less on the cruise and worked more in the shadow world of the beaches, as his drugs whittled him down to a burning core of violence and hungers.
Let me see.
His dad took the bottle from Naylor's hand and checked the level of liquor.
Didn't leave much for your old man, he complained.
But he cracked the screw and sniffed the contents. Naylor waited, praying for luck. His father drank, made a face of respect.
Good stuff, he said.
The violence seeped out of the room. His father grinned and toasted Naylor with the bottle.
Damn good stuff.
He tossed his other bottle into the corner.
Way better than that swill.
Naylor ventured a smile. Glad you like it.
His father drank again and wiped his mouth.
Get to bed. You've got crew tomorrow. Bappy will cut you for sure if you're late.
He waved Naylor toward his blankets.
Lucky boy, you. He grinned again. Maybe that's what we'll call you from now on. Lucky boy.
The man's yellow horse teeth flashed suddenly benevolent.
You like the name Lucky Boy? He asked.
Naylor nodded hesitantly. Yeah, I like it. He made himself smile wider, willing to say anything to keep his father in this new good mood.
I like it a lot.
Good.
His father nodded satisfied.
Go to bed, Lucky Boy.
His father took another swallow from Naylor's luck gift and settled down to watch the storm as it rolled toward them. Naylor pulled a dirty sheet over himself. From the far side of the room, his old man muttered,
"You did good."
Naylor felt a flush of relief at the compliment. It carried with it the whiff of a father that he remembered from before, when he was small and his mother was still alive. A different time, a different father. In the dim light, Richard Lopez could almost be the man who had helped Naylor carve the Rust Saint's image into the wall above his mother's sickbed. But that had been a long time ago. Naylor curled in on himself, glad to feel safe for the night. Tomorrow might be different, but this day had ended well. Tomorrow would handle itself.
Chapter 6.
The storm rolled onto the coast with all the implacable power of an old-world tank. Towering cloud banks built on the horizon and then swept inward, bearing steady rain. Thunder grumbled over the ocean and lightning lit the underbellies of the clouds, flashing from sea to sky and back again. The deluge opened. Naylor woke to the roar of storm on bamboo walls. Wind and water poured in through the open door, lit by explosions of electricity. His father was just a shadow slumped beside him, mouth open, snoring. Wind whirled through the house, scraping Naylor's face with cold fingers, then leaping to the wall and tearing away Naylor's picture of the clipper ship. The paper swirled madly for a moment before being sucked out the window into darkness, disappearing before Naylor could even try to grab it. Rain spattered his skin, coming in cold where palm thatching was already tearing away under the increasing battery of the winds. Naylor crawled over his father and stumbled to the door. Outside, the beach swarmed with activity, people moving skiffs deeper into the trees, chasing after livestock. The storm looked worse than just a blow, maybe a city killer even, the way the clouds swirled and scattered lightning across the wrecks offshore. Even though the tide should have been out, the waves and breakers were big all across the beach, the storm surge pressing inland. His father claimed that the storms were worse every year, but Naylor had never seen anything like the monster bearing down on them. He turned back into the shack. "Dad," he shouted, "everyone's moving higher. We need to get out of the surge." His father didn't respond. The night crews were pouring off the wrecks, men and women scrambling down hemp ladders, dangling and dropping like fleas jumping from a dog, plummeting into the increasing surf. Electricity outlined the black hulks against daybright sky. Then everything disappeared into blackness. Rain slashed the beach. Naylor scrambled around the shack, looking for possessions to salvage. He tugged on his last set of clothes, grabbed the phosphor grease, found the silver earring and the luck bag of rice that he'd been given. The house creaked and heeled as wind gusted. The tin and bamboo wouldn't last long. The storm was a city killer for sure, what some people called a party wrecker or an Orleans surge. When Naylor peered back out into the storm's rage, he could see now that everyone was fleeing for heavy shelter. Shadow people clawed out of the darkness, hunched against curtains of wind and water as they dashed for safety, running for things like the salvage train with its iron freight cars that might not fly away. Naylor dragged all their possessions over to his father's inert form. He pulled the sheet off the bed and fumbled one-handed with their belongings. His wounded shoulder burned with pain at the frantic effort. He shoved everything into the sheet and tied it in a bundle. More rain poured through the disintegrating thatch. His father's pale skin gleamed with rainwater, and yet still he didn't move. Naylor grabbed a tattooed arm. "Dad!" No response. "Dad!" Naylor shook him again, tried to drive his nails into the man's dragon-decorated flesh. "Wake up!" The man barely stirred, sunk so deep in amphetamine blowout that nothing affected him. Naylor rocked back on his heels, suddenly thoughtful. If they took the full brunt of the city killer, there wouldn't be anything left here. He'd heard that sometimes a surge could move the coastline inland as much as a mile, turning beaches and trees into a murky swamp sea, the new ragged tide line of rising sea levels. A big blow could easily move the hulks of the ships as well, might shove them right over the house, even if it didn't blow away. Naylor straightened. He hefted the sheet, groaning at the cumbersome load. When he reached the doorway, the wind blasted him, lashing his face with rain and sand and leaves. More lightning slashed the beach. In the flickering light, a chicken coop tumbled past, all the birds already gone, every one of them lost to the gray roar. Naylor looked back at his father, conflicted emotions warring within him. The man wasn't moving. The chemicals in his brain were so depleted he wasn't going to come awake even for the storm. Sometimes when the crash was bad, his father could sleep for 2 days.
Naylor normally blessed the peace his father's drug crashes brought. It would be so much simpler. Naylor set down the sack of possessions. Cursing himself for his own stupidity, he plunged into the storm. The man was a drunk and a bastard, but still they were blood. They shared the same eyes, the same memories of his mother, the same food, the same liquor. Family, as much as he had. A maelstrom of sand and copper screws and plastic shards swirled around him, the debris of the shipbreaking business ripping at his skin as he ran barefoot down the beach to Pima's shack. Rust flakes, bits of insulation, a roll of wire. Trash, strippings, flying like knives. A gust of wind drove Naylor to his knees and sent him crawling, his shoulder a bright blossom of pain. Sheet metal whipped overhead, flying like a kite. A roof, a bit of ship. It was impossible to tell. It slashed into a coconut palm and the tree toppled, but the blast of the storm was so loud Naylor couldn't hear the collapse.
Crouched on the sand, he squinted through gushing rain. Pima's shack was gone, but the shadows of the girl and her mother were still there, fighting the storm, trailing ropes, struggling to hold on to a blurry shadow.
Naylor had always thought of Pima's mother as big from her work on the heavy crew, but now in the storm she seemed as small as sloth. The rain cleared briefly. Sodna and Pima were lashing down a skiff, tying it to a tree trunk as it bent in the wind. Debris scoured them. When he got close, he could see that Pima had taken a cut to her face, and blood ran freely from her forehead even as she worked with her mother to secure the lines.
"Naylor!"
Pima's mother waved him over.
"Help Pima! Hold that side!"
She threw him a line. He twisted it around his good arm and hauled, the two of them handling one end of the skiff, shoulder to shoulder as Pima made the knots fast. As soon as it was knotted, Pima's mother motioned him and shouted,
"Get up into the trees! There's a rock hollow higher up! It should give shelter!"
Naylor shook his head.
"My dad!"
He waved back at his own shack, a shadow still miraculously upright.
"He won't wake up!"
Pima's mother stared through the blackness and rain toward the shack. Her lips pursed.
"Hail, all right," she waved at Pima. "You take him up."
The last thing Naylor saw was Sodna's shadow plunging into the wind, running down the beach, surrounded by lightning strikes. And then Pima was dragging him up into the trees, scrambling through the whipping branches in the roar of the storm. They climbed wildly, desperate to get out of the surge. Naylor looked back again at the beach and saw nothing. Pima's mother was gone. His father's shack. Everything. The beach was scoured clean. Out on the water, fires burned. Oils somehow ignited and blazing despite the torrents.
"Come on!"
Pima tugged him onward.
"It's still a long way!"
They fled deeper into the jungle, scrambling through mud and stumbling over thick cypress roots. Torrents of water rushed down over them, filling the wood-cutting trails of the forest with their own muddy rivers. At last they reached Pima's destination, a small limestone cave, barely big enough to hold them both. They crouched within. Rainwater poured over the brink in a miserable torrent. It pooled around them so that they huddled ankle-deep in cold water. Still, it was sheltered from the wind. Naylor stared out at the storm. A city killer for sure.
"Pima," he started.
Shh! She pulled him back from the water, deeper into the hole.
"She'll be fine. She's tough. Tougher than any storm."
A tree flew past, flying as if it were a toothpick flung by a child. Naylor bit his lip. He hoped Pima was right. He'd been a fool to ask for help. Pima's mother was worth 100 of his dad. They waited, shivering. Pima tugged him closer and they huddled together, sharing heat, waiting for nature's violence to pass.
Chapter 7 The storm raged for 2 nights, thrashing the coastline, tearing away anything that wasn't tied down. Pima and Naylor huddled through it, watching the roar and rain and holding close as their lips turned purple and their skins pimpled with cold. On the third day, in the morning, the sky suddenly cleared. Naylor and Pima forced their stiff limbs to move and stumbled down to the beach, joining a ragged assemblage of other survivors who were streaming toward the sands. They broke through the last of the trees, and Naylor stopped, dumbstruck. The beach was empty, not a sign of human habitation. Out in the blue water, the shadows of the tankers still loomed, randomly scattered like toys, but nothing else remained. The soot was gone, the oil in the waters, everything shone brightly under the blaze of morning tropic sun.
"It's so blue," Pima murmured. "I don't think I've ever seen the water so blue."
Naylor couldn't speak. The beach was cleaner than he'd ever seen in his life.
"You're alive, huh?"
Moon Girl grinning at them. Covered with mud from whatever bolt hole she'd found, but alive nonetheless. Behind her, Pearlie and his parents were coming onto the beach, shocked expressions on their faces as they tried to register the changes.
"All in one piece."
Pima searched down the beach.
"You see my mom?"
Moon Girl shook her head, her piercings glinting in the sun.
"She might be over there."
She waved vaguely toward the train yard.
"Lucky Strike's giving out food to anyone who wants it. Credit for everyone until the shipbreaking starts again."
"He saved food?"
"Couple rail cars full."
Pima tugged Naylor.
"Come on."
A crowd of people were gathered around the scavenge train, all of them waiting for Lucky Strike to dole out supplies. Pima and Naylor scanned the faces, but there was no sign of Sodna.
Lucky Strike was laughing and saying,
"No worries. We got enough for everyone. No one's starving while we wait for old Lawson and Carlson to come back from Mismet. The Rust Buyers might be hiding from hurricanes, but Lucky Strike's taking care of everyone."
Lucky Strike was grinning, his long black dreadlocks tied back, but Naylor knew he was also telling people there wouldn't be any rioting for food. And if there was anyone people would obey, it was Lucky Strike. Lucky Strike had been collecting real power ever since his first bit of luck freed him from heavy crew. Now he smuggled everything from antibiotics to Crystal Slide into Bright Sands Beach. He had deals worked with the boss men to do whatever he liked. His hand was in the gambling dens and the nail sheds and a dozen other businesses, and the money just rolled in, turning into gold nuggets that he hung glittering from the tips of his dreadlocks or else drove through his ears in thick, gleaming rings. The man dripped wealth.
"Keep back,"
Lucky Strike shouted.
"Keep on back."
He was smiling and looked confident, but he had a line of hired goons standing behind him to back up his authority. Naylor scanned the arrayed thugs, recognizing some of the killers that his father ran with. It seemed like Lucky Strike had collected the best of the worst for his protection. Even the half-man was there. The monster's huge muscled form loomed over the rest of the thugs, its dog-like muzzle snarling and showing its teeth to scare back the hungry people. Pima caught the direction of Naylor's gaze.
"That's the one my mom's heavy crew used to pull sheet iron. Said he could lift 4 times what a man could."
"What's it doing up there?"
"Must have figured out that working muscle for Lucky Strike pays better than heavy crew."
The half-man bared its fangs again and rumbled a warning. The crowds that had been closing in on the train cars backed off. Lucky Strike laughed.
"Well, at least you all listened to my killer dog, huh? That's right. Everybody step back, or my friend Tool here will teach you a lesson in manners. I mean it. Everyone, give us some space. If Tool doesn't like you, he'll eat you raw.
The crowd mumbled discontent, but they gave way under Tool's gaze.
Pima!
Naylor and Pima turned at the shout. It was Sadna, hurrying toward them, Naylor's father in tow. Sadna swept up to hug Pima. Naylor's father halted a step behind. He inclined his head.
Guess you saved my ass, lucky boy.
Naylor nodded carefully.
Guess so.
Suddenly his father laughed and grabbed him.
Damn, boy. You're not going to hug your old man?
It hurt Naylor's stitches and Naylor winced in the man's grip, but he didn't fight the embrace. His dad said,
I woke up in the middle of that damn storm and had no idea what the hell was going on. Almost killed Sadna before she explained things.
Naylor glanced worriedly at Pima's mother. But Sadna just shrugged.
We worked it out.
Damn right.
His dad grinned and touched his jaw.
She hits like a sledgehammer.
For a moment, Naylor worried that his father was carrying a grudge. But for once, the man wasn't sliding high. He seemed almost rational, as clean as the beach. Already he was craning his neck to see how food was being distributed.
Tools up there!
He laughed and clapped Naylor on the shoulder.
If Lucky Strike will hire that dog, damn sure he'll take me. We'll eat good tonight.
He began shoving through the crowd toward Lucky Strike's guard detail. He didn't look back at Sadna or Naylor or Pima at all. Naylor breathed a sigh of relief. No hard feelings then. The inventory of the beach and the shipbreakers continued. Rumor had it that they'd missed the heart of the storm. It had passed to their east, up Orleans Alley, roaring through the old city ruins and then tearing farther north into the sea wreckage of Orleans II. Damage all the way up through the guts of the place, people said. Which meant that they'd been lucky at Bright Sands, and missed being flattened. Even with a glancing blow from the storm, the damage to Bright Sands Beach was immense. They found bodies everywhere, tangled in kudzu vines of the jungle, stuck in the trees high up, floating out in the surf. Lucky Strike organized scavenge parties to take care of the dead, burning them or burying them according to their rituals, and making the place safe from disease. Names rolled in. Bappy had gone missing, either torn apart in the storm or drowned, but gone nonetheless. No one knew if Sloth was alive or dead. Tick-Tock and his entire family were found. No sign of damage on them, but all of them dead anyway. All the scrap and rust buyers who contracted with Lawson and Carlson had fled inland to wait out the storm. With no companies like GE buying scrap for their manufacturing operations, or shipping companies like Patel Global Transit looking to buy scavenge to sell overseas, the shipbreaking yards were idle. The accountants and assayers and corporate guards who weighed and purchased the raw materials that came off the wrecks had left, and with no one around to buy their product, the shipbreakers used their days cutting and renewing their shacks, scavenging the jungle, and fishing for food in the ocean. Until things got organized, people were on their own. Pima and Naylor went scavenging for food, collecting green coconuts that had fallen, before turning to the pools and tides. Out in the distance, the outcrop point of an island was visible.
There's crabs out that way, Pima said.
Yeah? Should we go that far?
Pima shrugged.
Better scavenge without competition, right?
She indicated the silent ships.
It's not like anyone's going to miss us.
They took a hemp sack and a bucket and went seeking, working their way across the sand, out along the spit that led to the island. All around, the ocean was a glittering mirror. Breakers rolled up to the shore, white as a baby's teeth. The black hulks of the broken ships stood out in the sun, looming monuments to a world that had fallen apart. Far out on the horizon, a clipper ship skated the ocean, its high sail unfurled. Naylor paused in his collections and watched as it carved across the blue water. So close, and yet so far.
"You going to keep daydreaming there?" Pima asked.
"Sorry." Naylor